everybody. This is William Del Pilar. Welcome to Fired Up Conservative Talk. And we're diving headfirst into some explosive stuff today. So strap on your heat shield because we've got two massive legal battles on deck that are lighting things up. But first, we will have a few words on the rumble in, not really the jungle, but the Oval Office between Zelensky versus Vance and then Zelensky versus Trump. And you're seeing some divided opinions out there, but every analyst I have seen when broken down is breaking it. Zelensky did not look bad. Then we're going to talk about the South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson leading a posse of 18 states to crash Dr. Fauci's pardon party. Yep, Biden might have tried to shield him, but these states are saying not so fast. They're digging into his COVID-19 moves. They're alleging misconduct that shredded the public trust, obviously, and they're not backing down. Then we've got Elon Musk Doge, the Department of Government Efficiency, and that is under fire with over 70 lawsuits slamming it as a data-grabbing monster. It's funny how they don't do that for any other person working in the executive office. They're claiming privacy violations, but I think it's a genius move to cut, waste, and expose grip. When you hear the hate about this, my friends, spoiler alert, it's because they don't like Trump. And the Trump admin's fighting back, but the critics are loud. And then we get to break all this down with a legal heavy hitter. But then we'll also lighten it up as we analyze, well, I want to say the rumble in the jungle again, but this fight is between Dan Crenshaw and Tucker Carlson. And then we'll close it out with our popular, our ever-growing popular segment, Fired Up. But first, before we get into all of this, make sure you bookmark grumbiesmedia.com where you can find this podcast and others like it. You can also find our podcast at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, ePandora under the handle Grumblings Media. And before I introduce them, I see Randy's going to join us. It looks like our producer here is going to try to get him on, and he's a legal powerhouse. Randy Burholtz is his name, and he is the secretary of the California Republican Party since 2019. This guy's not just fighting the good fight in a deep blue state we call California or California. He's a San Diego-based attorney, a biotech CEO at Rancho Santa Fe Bio, and a two-time cancer survivor. God bless him, who's bringing grit and smarts to the table. With a Yale Law degree, a Rhodes Scholarship. We have our own Rhodes Scholar at Fired Up, people. Take that, Clinton. He's a Rhodes Scholarship from Oxford and over 20 years in law and venture capital. Show me the money. Randy's here to break down the legal chaos we're unpacking today. And with that, let us welcome our panel. And looks like we had some technical difficulties with Randy. John, I'll let you work that out. I may have you take over the show and intro the Ukraine thing so I can help Big John by passing him Randy's phone number there. So.
Yeah.
What are your tell the audience what happened and let's get right into it.
Well, so this is the show Fired Up, and it's not just this house that was fired up. It was the White House today that was fired up. Zelensky came and showed up and said basically, hey, I'm ready to do a deal. We want to trade our rare earth minerals for your money and maybe a peace deal. But at some point, it seemed like Zelensky had said before the press conference that he did not want a ceasefire. No ceasefire, no ceasefire. So where's the peace deal if you're just saying no ceasefire? And so when they actually got in front of the media, Zelensky decided to take that opportunity to take it to the American people right in front of Trump and Vance's face and make the case that, no, we need to keep fighting. Here's some pictures of children who have been killed. It's all Putin's fault. Will you condemn Putin, et cetera, et cetera? And after about 50 minutes of Trump and Vance actually taking it on the chin a little bit, but it was still pleasant up until Vance says, no, we need to try diplomacy. This is the time for diplomacy. The time for war is over. And Zelensky had enough. And he started to lecture the president and vice president. No, this is not the time for diplomacy because we've tried that. I don't know what his end game was except for more war. And where does that land us? So that's the synopsis of it.
And with that, before we go on, let's welcome Randy. Randy, I gave you a grand old entry. You did it.
Oh, you did. It was wonderful. I hope I can live. Hope I can live up to it.
So do we. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. So real quick, Randy, we're going to talk about the blow up in the Oval Office before we go on. I just want to spend a couple of minutes on it because we got a heavy show with you as a premier guest here to help analyze and break down a lot of the legalities of Doge, of the Fauci situation with the AGs. But what are your quick thoughts? Were you able to see what happened today in the Oval Office?
I was, and look, you know, I just want to preface this by saying I'm part Polish, and so you know, Poles and Russians don't, you know, we don't go together very well, right? You know, look, you know, Donald Trump is asking all the right questions, and he's demanding that the person that the leader of a country who we're giving $350 billion to show some respect. Wear a suit. Come on. Don't just wear like, I mean, I've got my sport jacket on here because, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, I can't come on here with something in black again, you know, but look, you know, when you think about a foreign policy in America first, you know, America is both the leader of the free world, but at the same time, we're not chumps. You know, and what's important here is that if we're given our money, we want to have somebody be appreciative and, you know, we want them to understand that we give our money for a purpose. And that's not for, you know, the Ukraine to give it to its oligarchs or anything else. But, you know, I think the president made it very clear. He's not, you know, President Zelensky's not dealing with President Biden anymore. He's dealing with President Trump. And he's dealing with President Trump, who's really mad because President Zelensky really tried to cuddle up to President Biden and also the Democrats. So, look, a lot of strong personalities here. Where we come out, you know, where will we come out? I think we'll get our minerals agreement. I think we'll get Zelensky back to the table. But Zelensky has been really embarrassed here on the world stage, and he needs to understand we have the power and we have the cards.
Exactly. And Ahmed, this was supposed to be a signing of the mineral deal. And it seemed to me that Zelensky had a plan. He showed up with pictures. And thank goodness we didn't see him because we were probably not very kind in terms of some of the horror. And it seemed like he was trying to sway the media and he was trying to lecture Trump. And I think Vance had enough of it. I got confused. I said, well, why did Vance jump in? And then it dawned on me, well, he was trying to get Trump to condemn Putin. And Trump's role in all this is as a mediator. And I think Vance had enough of that. What was your take in terms of, because it was fine until that point.
It was. I watched all 15 minutes of it, or maybe 55, and thought, when are the fireworks going to happen? Because it was going along rather well, and I think Trump was trying to be patient, and he was saying, listen, and Trump was saying all along, I want peace. I know people are suffering. I don't like people to be dead. I don't want more people to die. So he was getting that point across. You know, I really like J.D. Vance. The one thing I didn't like today with Zelensky started to get ornery, and when Vance said, you know, I haven't heard you say thank you. Okay, for me as a diplomat, I think that's probably my strength as a human being. I like to have people at peace and accordance and all of that. I felt like, why didn't he just say, you know, I don't hear you being very appreciative? But the way he said it, I thought J.D. was being a little nasty.
It's not that. Real quick on the thank you. Sure. Now, there's a story that came out, was reported by NBC, that Biden had it with that. Like he was just demanding, no thank you, no gratefulness. And as Randy pointed out, hey, we're giving you all of this. And do you think J.D. just felt, hey, he's a petulant child. He just keeps asking and demanding. And now he's trying to use the media to sway Trump and goad him into condemning Putin. I'm just asking because I think that's how I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but that's kind of how I saw it. But you saw it differently.
No, I think it was interesting to watch it play out between all these powerhouses. All their body language was fascinating. Marco Rubio, too, if you watched him. Pete Hegseth, too. Sometimes sitting like this, sometimes really leaning in. And in the conversation, you're like, oh, my gosh, what is he thinking right now? You know, so I thought all of them, and Trump sort of let JD take over as the bulldog for a second. He was listening. He was saying he wanted peace. He wasn't going to be taken, you know, he wasn't going to take the bait by Zelensky. So it's fascinating to watch it all, but I just want America to listen. We're going to win. Trump said it. We're holding the cards. You're not. What can the guy do now? I mean, really, if we're not supporting that war, it's a big problem. So he's already got him sort of by the balls. Sorry to put it that way. He sort of does, though. He's going to have to come back to the table. I see that. I don't see how, you know, Europe does need to step up more. He made really good points, Trump did. And he said, we're holding the cards, and you're not. So I don't know why Zelensky got the way he got, but I just felt like at that moment, instead of, like, turning the knife a little bit, we could have said, listen, this just doesn't seem – I think they could have still saved it right then.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? Maybe they could have saved it.
But
am I wrong?
Oh, go ahead. If you have a question.
You're not wrong. I was just going to say that every time a woman says they got us by the balls, I always just end up crossing my legs.
Sorry.
Your thoughts on what Annette said, and what is your take on the situation that happened?
No, I think the context is that they had a meeting before the 55 minutes, and clearly in this meeting before, behind closed doors, Zelensky said, there will be no ceasefire.
Yes.
And then they come out in front of the media, and then they have this really nice press conference. And Trump was gracious. I mean, he was tapping Zelensky's knee and making some jokes.
Yeah.
On the heels of this contentious behind closed doors meeting. And so at some point, when Zelensky kept coming to the media and saying, yeah, here's the pictures, here's the dead children, here's the... I think J.D. Vance, like Annette said, was starting to have enough. And then all of a sudden, Trump, near the end, just finally had enough himself. And he said, look, I'm trying to accomplish something here, and we can't do that if I come out and say Putin bad or Zelensky bad. We're just trying to bring everyone together to the table and talk.
So that was my take. Yes, and to your point, G., he was being gracious. He's like, oh, no, I like his outfit. You know, he was still trying then. Like, oh, I'm cool with what he's wearing, you know? Like,
well, the outfit thing, my take on that was that's kind of a backhanded compliment. Because there was one advisor in the background who did ask at some point, how come you didn't come here to wear a suit? You're meeting with the president of the United States. You're not wearing a suit. So I think that was a backhanded compliment. So my take on this is he will come back, hat in hand, suit on, Donald Trump tie on, and he's ready to negotiate whatever minerals we need and a peace deal.
You know, there was a point, guys, when JD started talking. Trump didn't look confused, but he was like, where's this going? And you saw his facial reaction. He's listening. And then he immediately turned around to Zelensky because he understood what JD was doing. And he kind of let JD. I think JD, they keep talking. Even this early, guys, they're talking about who's 2028, who's jockeying for position. I think JD has the early lead with this America first. Randy, I am Latino. My country was created by the Great White Fleet when Teddy Roosevelt sent the fleet down to Colombia and said, you will allow these rebels to create their own country, and thus Panama was born. The United States has had a hand in the aristocrat family that lorded over us. Then they selected Torrijos, and Manuel Noriega ended up supposedly killing Torrijos. But my point being is the U.S. has had a direct hand in my country. And I'm trying to, because I don't know if you're going to agree because you're Polish in this, but I view this whole Ukraine situation, and Annette Ross, a little teaser, her and I are going to do a podcast, a mini podcast this weekend explaining what happened. I view, and we're going to go into the 90s. You don't have to go 4,000 years, 2,000 years deep for this. But my point is going to the 2014 coup, it was a pro-Russian government that was working with Russia to help give them Crimea back. We helped stage a coup. We helped install the next leader. And then Russia invaded Crimea anyway. Instead of negotiating, they invaded. And my whole issue is I always viewed us growing up as a child in Panama, America, the great savior. They brought the mighty dollar to Panama. They helped my relatives out. And now as an adult, I take a seat and I'm like, wow, What I'm trying to say, Randy, is I think we had a hand in where we are today. Russia invaded. I'm not defending Russia. But at the end of the day, that coup, I think, kind of created a domino effect. And Zelensky still wants – he wants unconditional peace at his terms, or he wants to keep fighting. Is there any way you can see Zelensky's no ceasefire and keep fighting and they win?
Well, look, I guess a couple of things. You know, as President Trump mentioned today, President Obama was in power in 2014, and President Obama, you know, we still wonder about President Obama, you know, with his deals with communist parties and everything else. And the truth of the matter is he was either asleep or he was, you know, in cahoots with the Russians at that point. Just remember everything everything the Russians say about us. You know, President Obama, you know, was, you know, was, you know, everything they say about us is sort of true to them more than us. So look, you know, what the Russians need is a good punch in the face, right? Because that's, you know, somebody, I guess, in international political affairs once called it realpolitik, right? And that's what the Russians know. They're crude. I mean, they're crude, aggressive people. I mean, these are people who, you know, who rode on horseback to dominate people, you know, in that region for years. The Russians don't negotiate, right? You have to have a leverage on them. You know, I must say the one thing the communist Chinese know, and the Chinese know, you know, is this whole battle for leverage. We in the U.S., you know, we're so four-year oriented that we don't understand that the leverage you do beforehand sets you up so that you don't get into bad situations. I mean, truthfully, you know, the only way to take back the Crimea is to send B-52s over there and to take back the Crimea. The Ukrainians are not going to do it by themselves, no matter how much we help.
Right.
You know, so you know, as J.D. Vance, I think, said, and as President Trump said, get real. You know, Zelensky, you know, get real. You're either going to take it over, you're going to kill Putin, you know, or the like. But don't prance around like some, you know, some little Napoleonic dictator right now. You don't have any cards. What are your cards? I mean, you're barely hanging on. You know, you've been acting like a dictator because, you know, you claim you're in a war economy. But the truth is the Ukrainians are corrupt as any Eastern European. And believe me, I know Eastern Europeans. They're so, you know, a lot of these people are ex-commies. I mean, they're so corrupt. That's just how they do. You know, as Zelensky said himself, we're supposed to get 350 billion, you know, and he can't even account for it all. Come on.
Exactly. I brought that up earlier. All right, guys, we got a heavy show ahead. I just wanted to touch base on this, but give me your thought. And G's going to have to leave us. He's got a previous appointment, but he just loves this show so much. Had to get on it at the early minutes. But that said, I want to hear your thoughts at this image. It is the Ukrainian ambassador as Zelensky, in my opinion, was digging a hole. We'll start with you, Annette.
Where's the image? Okay.
Can you figure out which one?
Yes, I can.
Thoughts on that image as Zelensky was talking. That is the Ukrainian ambassador.
She's flabbergasted? I don't know. She's despondent? She's... I don't even know what the word is. Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Randy, your thoughts on when you see that image, Ukrainian ambassador Zelensky spoke.
You know, I think she's realizing that her guy blew it, and if he doesn't right the ship, can probably, you know, his country could go by the boards. I mean, that's the truth of the matter.
I'll give my thoughts before Gene. What I see there is no, stop, no. That's what I see. As you said, Randy, is the ship is sinking. The more words he speaks, the deeper that hole gets. And I think, honestly, guys, without being silly, this shot will go down in history like the Vietnam shot of the child.
I agree.
I don't want to say important, but that's how monumental that shot is. Gee, you get a final word before we kick.
Yeah, I would love to know exactly at which moment in the video she did that. But yeah, that is the she's seen this before over in her country with whatever meeting she's been in with them, and she's thinking, here we go again, and this war is going to go on for much longer. That's exactly what she's thinking.
All right, guys, hold on. I lied. Final question. Make it real quick, though. How do you see this playing out? Do you ultimate peace or Europe takes over? Annette.
Ultimate peace. I think Zelensky will come back.
Randy, sir.
Ultimate peace and minerals agreement and elections in Ukraine.
That's exactly how I see it, only because he doesn't have a leg to stand on. Europe doesn't have the money. The next best player in the game is Germany. They've only given $12 billion to our actual $100 billion documented dollars. Trump keeps saying $350 billion, but in my research, I just have found $100 billion documented. But still, $12 billion, $100 billion, Europe cannot support Ukraine. Peace will happen, I predict, in 2 weeks. G, you get the final word on this topic, sir.
Yeah, I think he's going to come back with that Trump suit on. He's going to bring a deck of playing cards because he told Trump he's not playing cards. And there will be a peace deal signed, I don't know if in 2 weeks, but at least within a month, and we'll get the mineral rights, exactly what all you guys said.
Exactly. So
I got to run.
Thank you for having me on.
So long, G. All right, guys, listening on, I wanted to get into a fun topic here before we got into the heavy stuff. I don't want to spend a lot of time, just a few minutes on it. But it's the Tucker Carlson, Dan Crenshaw spat is a lightning rod in today's conservative landscape because it's pitting a populist media giant in Tucker Carlson against a congressional war hero who has become a polarizing figure. And the clash was sparked by a hot mic moment on February 24th. That kind of opened up old wounds because these two guys don't like each other. And Crenshaw, in essence, said, if I saw Tucker Carlson, I'd kill him. Randy, your quick thoughts. I'm going to try to pull up the video here.
Sure. Look, Tucker Carlson is a graduate of La Jolla Country Day here in San Diego. So, you know, he does go, you know, he is a bit of an elitist. You know, Tucker could get under your skin if he's right. That's just how he is. Crenshaw, though, if Crenshaw wasn't a Navy SEAL, I'm not sure people would actually be voting for him. I've met him. I've heard him speak. He came out against Trump. He's come out against a bunch of conservative stuff. So I'm not sure he's in our camp anymore. And, not saying I think he's going to switch to the other side, but, he's somebody we need to watch because, he's not as conservative as he probably used to be.
Exactly. Annette, before I get your response, let's check this out here real quick.
Sure.
And courtesy of GBN, Great Britain Network.
Have you ever met Tucker?
We've talked a lot.
There you have it. That's it. I'll bleep and kill him. Uh-oh. To the producer, can you pull that off? I seem to have lost control of this one here. There we go. Thank you, sir. Annette, your thoughts. First of all, we all can agree a congressional representative shouldn't be saying that. But in his defense, it was a hot mic moment. Your thoughts.
I hate that kind of talk. I really do. I can't stand it. I would just say two things. One, I agree with Randy 100% that him being a Navy SEAL is propping him up right now. You know, that's what he's resting on, is giving him some credibility maybe with some people. And I'd also say that I think it shows that Trump's in office, but there's still a lot of angry people out there from even among those who are conservatives, which is interesting because there's some friction in the party, I think. And I found that more interesting than anything else. But I abhor that kind of talk. And, I don't like it.
Yeah, you know, there's certain decorum you need to carry. I remember for us Latinos, we look at decorum when you're in certain positions as godlike, meaning if you're a doctor, you're a lawyer. And granted, I come from a dirt poor family. I was blessed middle class because my parents moved to the States. But my whole family's dirt poor. So they look at these type of figures. I don't want to say godlike, but, you know, like that's something you want to aspire to. That's something you want to be. So to hear that talk is not quite what you want to hear. I will defend him. It was a hot mic moment. Carlson hash trashed him. But to push back a little bit on you, Randy, not in a bad way, but
yeah.
I don't think he was ever a conservative. I think he was not part of the – remember the Tea Party movement, 2009, 2010? There were a whole swath of so-called conservatives that got elected and immediately turned, meaning they weren't really conservative. They used that movement. I think Dan Crenshaw used the fact he was a Navy SEAL, highly revered, highly respected. I'm a conservative, too. He even had a great conservative commercial for his reelection with Rob Smith out of Massachusetts, jumping out of a plane and all that. And then he's shown his true colors. He votes with the rhinos, the establishment, whatever you want to call it. And I'm sorry, I'm a small government guy. I believe in conservative values. I believe in being kind to you, teaching you how to fish. You become a proper constituent that can help our country. Am I wrong to look at it from that? And Randy, I think I know your answer. I don't think Dan Crenshaw is that person anymore, if he ever was.
Yeah, and as Annette said, though, too, that there's a certain decorum. And look, President Trump sometimes has it, sometimes doesn't. You know, let's just be honest. He's your grandfather who gets nasty sometimes. You know, I think he was trying to be polite today, and Zelensky just got under his skin. You know, not to say it's bad to do that sometimes when somebody gets under your skin, but you know what, Crenshaw's got to, you know, act congressional. You know, act like you're, and he's probably a dad. You know, act like you're a father. You know, take these childish games, and if you feel like that, make sure the mic is off, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Again, I'm not defending them, but, man, how many politicians have been caught in those hot mic moments? Annette, so before I get to you, I want to show this this image here. He was also called out on Twitter. Dan Crenshaw, did you threaten to kill my friend Tucker Carlson? LOL, no. Community notes, Dan Crenshaw did in fact say that if he ever met Tucker, he would kill him. I mean, it just got worse. My final question to you two on this topic, and that we'll start with you with your comments on him denying it and getting caught out. But do you think this can affect his future? Do you think, because Elon Musk is threatening the primary, and look, I'm telling you people, and Randy, you can chime in on, because you're in the system with being a part of the party. I think somebody like Elon, with worth $800 billion or however much he's worth, primarying a district is child's play for him. He has all the money in the world to do that. I think this puts him in potential danger of being primaried. Your thoughts?
Yeah, look, fortunately or unfortunately, money speaks in our system. And it's like President Trump. If you have President Trump's endorsement, you have a good chance to get elected, you know, in certain districts. You know, and you know, I don't want to say Elon Musk is like George Soros. He has more money than George Soros. But Elon Musk is not just the richest man in the world. He's one of the most powerful men in the world. So I wouldn't get that guy mad right now. You know, unless you have somebody else who has as much power on your side.
Exactly. I apologize, Annette. I meant to go to you. And I started talking right there. So what are your thoughts on the fact he got called out? I mean, you said you don't like this. But, and what are your thoughts on him possibly being primaried?
Well, then he doubled down and lied.
Yes.
So that to me, that's like that's a stain. You know what I mean? I put somebody through, I know politicians lie. William, we have these conversations about human beings all the time. I know people lie sometimes. But that was obviously, you know, a moment where that was like on air and you know what I mean? And he could have, the fact that he lied about that, I just found that to be, I was befuddled by that. Yeah, I think it could have, for sure. You know what? It's hard. It is hard once you start to lose ground with people to try to get it back. Once people start to say, you know, he doesn't really maybe have that much integrity, then the Navy SEAL thing can only go so far. So I think it could be in danger. Yeah. Sure.
Oh, I agree. Look, this feud is a snapshot of a movement at crossroads. Mm-hmm. Rising, the establishment's fading, and Carlson's walking away with the crowd because he has the mass crowd support. So I truly think this is an issue for Dan Crenshaw moving forward if Elon chooses to target him, and I'm sure he'll confer with Trump. Any final words before we move on, Randy, on this one?
You know, Crenshaw has to watch out. You know, he doesn't want to become the next Adam Kinziger, right? And you know, and he's got to watch out. And he's careless now. And the Trump train, and you know, is coming through. And the Trump train is really, it's helping the nation, but at the same time, there are some, you know, people who, you know, are coming after certain people because they have been, I mean, nobody was more wrong than Donald Trump and his family and the entire nation between 2021 and 2024. I mean, we were just totally wrong. And, you know, what I like about President Trump that he's doing is he's settling some scores.
You know what? This is politics. It's ugly when people who accuse Trump of that, I'm like, well, what were your issues with every previous president? And Trump's actually very forgiving. People hate to say that, but I mean, hate to hear that. But I mean, he didn't go after Hillary Clinton, and he's going to do it the legal way. He's going to, I'm sure Bondi and Patel, they're going to bring up, but we need to stop this. I try to tell people, look, if they did it to Trump, they'll do it to you. In Panama, we saw this through two dictators, and any immigrant will tell you one of the main reasons they flee this country is because of dictatorships, authoritarian governments. They come here for law and order, a legal process. And I think Crenshaw's aligning himself with the wrong people who maybe they may be establishment Republicans, but they were okay with what the Democrats were doing to Trump. Annette, you have the final word on this topic.
Well, thank you. I just think the public discourse, we have to do a little bit better, because what happens is when it gets like this, the substance of an issue gets lost.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Let us move on to Fauci's pardon party. States line up to crash his day of reckoning. So we're going to dive into what I view as a groundbreaking legal showdown, and it's being led by the South Carolina Attorney General, Alan Wilson, who earlier this month in early February, he rallied a coalition of 18 state attorneys to investigate Dr. Anthony Fauci's role in COVID-19 response. So despite a federal pardon from former President Joe Biden, the states are charging ahead. They're alleging misconduct, and they're saying that shattered public trust, and I believe it did. And they say it may have broken state law. So today we're going to unpack it. We have our Rhodes Scholar with us to help guide us through all of this. So real quick, I started digging into Randy and his expertise. Annette, your thoughts on Dr. Fauci being investigated by state AGs?
Well, I'm super excited to have Randy here because actually, when you asked me my first thought on this, I had a question actually. My first in reading this and getting prepared for tonight was, is that legal to do once he's been pardoned, Randy? See, I didn't. Yeah.
So maybe we take a step back a little bit. So, you know, we are the United States of America, right? Mm-hmm. And the power lies in the states. The states give certain power, you know, to the federal government. And those powers are, you know, part of the Declaration and the Constitution, you know, essentially what we give to the federal government. And they're normally either enumerated powers, like, for example, defense, you know, immigration, or the federal government has typically jurisdiction when issues cross state lines, right? Mm-hmm. Right. When they involve either disputes between the states or issues that are, you know, predominant, you know, across state lines. So if anybody's interested, you know, in actually limited government, we really do have a federal system. So when you think about that, so what is a federal pardon then? So a federal pardon, you know, there are two parts to it. One is that pardon is typically done to somebody who has been convicted of a crime.
Right.
You know, what we have here is something in the future. I mean, it's like, I guess a future prosecution for a past crime. Well, why the hell do they need that if they're not guilty? Right. I mean, I don't get that. But secondly, then, you know, a federal pardon is typically only for federal crimes. So, for example, anything that happens within a state that doesn't cross federal lines or that is not part of the enumerated powers, a state attorney general has the right to prosecute. Now, the question, though, is what do you do when you have more than one attorney general, right? That sort of looks like it's sort of federal, right? But great question, you know, and the Supreme Court is really trying to, you know, take this issue by issue here. Have to see what this means. But I predict that by the end of President Trump's term, he, you know, Congress and he will probably come up with some legislation that will limit the presidential power, you know, the presidential pardon power to probably crimes, you know, crimes committed and convicted.
I think that's needed too for anybody. There's too many times both sides have pardoned people and you kind of shake their heads. And then when you do a little digging, oh, they're a big donor or they're related to a big donor or they're aligned with a big donor. It's sad to say, but money is what runs the world. So they're looking at holding them accountable through state charges. Now, what state charges can they hold him accountable for? If he was working for the feds, representing the feds, all this stuff was on a federal level. I mean, how does that break down? I guess what I'm asking is how are the courts going to look at everything you just told us?
Right.
We understand. So how do the courts look at it?
Right. So look, you know, two types of law, right? Civil and criminal, right? Two types of, you know, litigation, right? So and then you have, you know, causes of action. Right. So in my understanding here, you know, in this case with these state attorney generals is that what they're looking at is damage that has been caused to, you know, citizens in their state because of bad behavior by Dr. Fauci, who I think was head of the CDC at the time, right? So I think there are three main contentions here. I guess one that Dr. Fauci lied about the origins of COVID. Two, what he did then too was first one is origins. Second one, I guess then is the U.S. participation in this what's called gain of function. Research, and the third one was then really about about prosecuting, about going after people, and saying that any questions they had here was misinformation or disinformation. So, that's pretty much how it's broken down.
So I had in here, based on my research, they're going to count on a lot of federal subcommittee research and investigation. How does that break that down into what I'm asking is, if it's done for the whole country, how does South Carolina or Louisiana break that down into, hey, this was our specific state? I assume through examples that, and if everything goes and they're able to prosecute him, does this open the door for civil lawsuits against him? Well,
I mean, it should. Yeah. Because I would assume the attorney generals are going under criminal statutes here, you know. I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised there hasn't been a class action case across the world essentially against the Chinese government or against Dr. Fauci. Because I mean, look at all the suffering that what 3-4 years of suffering that the world has gone through here. You know, so.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I look at the 9/11 and the families and all the lawsuits and every president shutting the door on that. It seems like a futile effort. Plus, the politics of where China stands in the world today seems to have our own side that has been accused at times of aligning themselves with China. It's just not going to help out. So, what's the timeline do you see for this, Randy?
Yes.
February. How's that timeline going to work out?
Yeah, courts take time, but back, I think, to your other question about the federal, about the evidence from the, that the legislative group, that the congressional group found. Well, you know, evidence is evidence, right? So it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, coming from a federal source. I mean, evidence is evidence. That's the facts, right? So any lawyer would actually use that. You know, so, you know, okay, I don't want to say this is a first in kind of lawsuit, because, you know, when President Trump was in before, the Democrat attorney generals got together and sued. And during the last 4 years of the Biden administration, Republican attorney generals did the same thing. So it seems like this is becoming more commonplace. But as far as timing goes, frankly, what you have is you have a prolonged discovery period, and that can be anywhere from 3 months to 9 months to 10 months to 12 months. And then after that, what you have then are pre-trial, you know, motions and the like. And typically, once the discovery period is over, that's when you get summary judgment motions and the like. And then both parties will prepare, you know, for a trial or the like. So this is at the district court level right now, and so district courts are the main trial court. So what you have to have first is a trial. Then once you get the verdict on the trial, then you will have, you know, an appeal by one of the 11 circuit courts across the country, and then after that it goes up to the Supreme Court. So you know, sometimes it's possible to take a case to the Supreme Court sooner, you know, but you know, I would assume that these cases are, you know, if there's not a settlement in the case, I would assume here that, you know, this is anywhere from a year and a half, could be four years here.
That guy's so arrogant. I don't see him having a settlement at all. So, Randy, I'm sorry, Annette, do you have any questions for Randy?
I do have a question for Randy. You know, Randy, I think what disturbs me about this, and so many levels, but one of the things that disturbs me a lot is I got to meet Francis Collins a couple different times. He was running the NIH, you know that. Now he's not anymore when all of this was going down. He's one of the nicest people I met, you know, in medicine. He was mapping the human genome at the time. I went to a few panel discussions he was at. I got to meet him personally a couple times, like at a luncheon. But I just, and I know he's not Anthony Fauci, but I know he's been in a lot of the conversation too. But when we get back, and I just thought so well of him. When we go back to Anthony, I think about these guys at that time. What in the world would have been Penn motivation to hide something like, we know that that's where it began, or the gain of function research that was happening, or we do believe, or we have good reasons to suspect that this was let out of the lab. You know what I mean? That's how this began. I don't understand. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, nobody would do that, right?
Well, you know. You know, I've been in the pharmaceutical business probably for 20 years, 25 years. Okay. As both a lawyer and a businessman. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you see how the sausage is made, mm-hmm. and you know, you get a good understanding as to how people can, you know, hide stuff or the like. You know, and during a time of international health crises, you know, people react differently, you know, more dictatorial. But you know, I my own view is that there was no doubt in my mind that this came from the lab, you know, and I knew the first day, and I've studied outbreaks, you know, for hundreds of years, you know, I studied, you know, various, you know, outbreaks over that time period. But, you know, when I was, do you remember when this was first thought to be, because of some type of animal soda.
It was like a bat or something, yeah, I thought,
yeah,
first.
Yeah. But then when you found out, oh, right next to that, you know, to that night market, you know, 100 yards from there is this research facility. There was no doubt in my mind that this came from, you know.
You think that Anthony Fauci knew that too?
Yes. I think there was no doubt in my mind. I think the CIA knew that. Everybody knew that right across the board.
Oh, that's upsetting.
I have no doubt in my mind that they've all known that. If not, they're the dumbest people in the world. It's like an F troop or something.
And they would perpetuate a lie.
Yeah. Secondly, I think.
Are you laughing at me, William?
No. Secondly, I think what happened, from what I think the U.S. had some deal with the Chinese to do gain of research, you know, work. Mm-hmm. And I see what the U.S. tries to do is, you know, the U.S. tries to have these outlets, these sort of monitoring places throughout the world for various type of infectious diseases. And I think some research was being done at that lab that may have been partially paid by some type of U.S. grant. I think Fauci was very was told that that would not look good, you know, at all. So I think he was trying to cover his butt on that one. And then thirdly, I think this is one of the biggest cover-ups in history. You know, when they started to go after people, I studied the polio vaccine, and the polio vaccine has good stuff and it has bad stuff associated with it. I've studied reasons why we get the MMR shots. You know, the reasons why we get the MMR shots is not for any type of medical reason. It's because people in the countryside in the United States couldn't bring their kids in for three different shots within a certain time period. That's why they gave them all at one. And I think one of the problems there was people didn't realize at the time that you don't give a kid three different vaccines at one time. There are some kids that something's going to happen to. Right. So, but I think one of the biggest crimes, of humanity right now has been going against those people who have different remedies for COVID and that, and for, and making people who didn't get the vaccine, feel like outcasts. I think that was one of the biggest crimes, in history, to be honest with you.
And Annette, I was laughing not at you. I mean, I told you earlier how my country was created. World War II, we all know about the Germans and experimenting. What we don't know about is the Japanese did the same thing. We have the black service members in, what was it, Birmingham, given. We have soldiers being told, walk 10 miles this way in the radiation fallout. It is human nature to experiment. As a child, I was like, oh, my God, those poor little mouse. It's our human nature. Right or wrong. In this case, mostly bad if you want you to look throughout history. But that's how I was checking that. You have so much faith in humanity where I'm the exact, it's not that I don't have faith in humanity. I feel I understand the dark side of humanity. And we haven't made all this progress without doing some dark things to get there. And I'm not accepting the dark things, but we don't have to go down that road is my point. Just sit there and do that. Go ahead, Randy.
If Fauci is innocent, why was he pardoned?
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
Why was he pardoned? So there's, there's something's going on here. And President Trump is trying to be transparent here. But, more than likely, Anthony Fauci is not a good guy.
Right. And he wasn't pardoned just for the last few years, but all the way back to 2014.
Man, that's interesting.
We all have heard the horror stories of Fauci with AZT. My brother-in-law, he died of AIDS. And he went through that whole the whole drug issues back then. But that said, let us keep moving here. Great information, Randy. Great insight there. So we dug into South Carolina's big swing at holding Fauci accountable. So let's pivot to another wild legal showdown. Elon Musk Doge. He's getting hit with lawsuits over its alleged data grabs, and that's sparking privacy fears. Never mind, this has been going on for generations in terms of how the government works, but could this also be a move to stop Doge from exposing how the money gets grifted? So let's jump on right into it. I have a lot of notes here, but I just want to jump right into the first question. Doge is a non-agency, has non-agency status. It's lacking formal congressional creation. Can it legally sustain its operational and data handling authority under Trump's XO, Randy, or does this structure inherently violate the established governance norms? Man, I sound intelligent.
You do sound, but that's because you are intelligent. Yeah. So the way I look at this is that, yes, you're right about an agency and everything, but the President of the United States has the ability to, he runs the executive branch of government. The way I'm looking at this is that the president has essentially hired Elon Musk and previously Vivek Ramaswamy, in this entity called Doge, which Congress has to, Congress can make it more of an entity. Agencies, commissions were set up temporarily, then agencies are sort of more permanent than a commission, and then you have departments. But so in the way I look at this, and I think the way some courts are looking at this, is that the president has essentially hired a consultant, Elon Musk, and the team that they put together to go through and to do an audit of the books, the books and records of all the federal departments to see what's there. Frankly, in my view at least, every president has that ability to do that. You know, you either do it through the OMB or the General Accounting Office or the like. But so from an executive standpoint, what do you want the president to do? Right. So I think the second point, though, the Democrats are bringing up privacy and security and that's got a dual-edged sword. Right. On the one hand, they're right. Certain information like, Social Security numbers and, federal income tax for certain people. Right. And health conditions, like HIPAA stuff, there are privacy, anyone looking at those records from a federal government standpoint has to abide by certain privacy standards. I haven't looked at Elon Musk's consulting agreement, and I'm sure he probably has one. But as a consultant going in there, I think he may be a fisherman employee, but as either a consultant or employee, he has to abide by certain rules. Now the question is though, is anything he's doing, is that causing a harm? Is that causing individuals a harm? And if you notice some of these cases, the federal judges have said, the entities complaining have no standing, right? Right. And no standing means there's no perceived harm to them. So that's my sort of overview, I think, of the situation.
Randy, what about a situation like myself? When I was in the military, I was temporarily assigned to a medical facility. I had access to everybody's records. I was just not even from that section in the military. Then I got out, but I had a temporary job with the VA, and they put me in the records section working for the other VA records. So I had all access to all this. I guess my question is there are millions of us, millions of us in the government doing this type of stuff. What makes us different from why? It's like, Elon, to me, it's like the same thing. It's just, different type of a setup.
Oh, I agree. And as we said, just in your role or his role as a federal employee or a federal consultant, he would be violating criminal statute by utilizing any of that proprietary information. It's the same as if you're in a private company. You're in a private company, whatever you're viewing is owned by the company, and there are certain safeguards you have. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So you answer that. So looking at it from old way to new way. So the Privacy Act is 50 years old. How do you see the courts or how courts are applying it to DOJ's modern data grab? Meaning, how does it fit? Because, it's different.
No. Yeah. Well, it's different and it's the same at the same time, But I think what the courts are doing is they're saying, okay, he has an obligation to promote privacy. How do you know he hasn't done that, right? What's the cause of action? What has he leaked? And they're saying, well, he's leaked the fact that this entity owned by Stacey Abrams, nonprofit got a $2 billion grant, when it has $100 in the bank. Well, is that what's assumed to be private? No, bad behavior is not private, right? The government grants, are not private. Money that the government spends is not private. Somebody's personal financial information, that's probably private. Somebody's personal health information, that's probably private. But the things that Elon Musk is talking about on X and other places, that doesn't seem to me to be private.
I agree. So let's take a quick break here. Sure. And it turns, we're going to get back to the serious question with Randy. But a legend was born out of all this, rising like a phoenix after they killed him the first time. And his name is Big Balls. Let's start with you, Annette. When you heard about Big Balls and then you heard CNN commentators, let's be honest, there's something awkward about a former television anchor on cable going, and Big Balls, Big Balls, Big Balls. Your thoughts on Big Balls, Annette?
Well, William, I don't know what you're talking about.
Big Balls was an individual named Marco Elez. I wasn't going to talk about it. We were getting kind of heavy, so I just wanted to lighten it up. And they went after him. I guess he did some terrible tweets early on as a kid.
Oh, him. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's the Adolgian boy, right?
And they went after him. And Doge rehired him. It's more of a joke. I'm just making poking a little fun. What are your thoughts of cable TV? I mean, we're so out there now. You're hearing them say the term penis. You're seeing them say this. You know, but there was something odd. There's a video of every anchor out there just saying big balls, big balls, big balls, big balls, big balls. You can put it to Benny Hill. What are your thoughts on where media has gone today with big balls?
Mine? Big balls. You know me, William. I can't even that stuff is lost on me. You know, I can't even take that kind of thing seriously. Like, I just, it doesn't like resonate, and I probably just hear it and kind of ignore it. Are you asking me more like, do I think it's like denigrates the conversation in some way, or getting into
whatever your opinion on it? I'll start off with my opinion. Yeah. My opinion was, as an ex-sailor, it's legendary. Because I laughed at it. I thought he made a mockery of the CNN, these MSNBC people. They had to say it. Their hatred for Trump and everything, Elon, they said it because they just wanted to get at him. He did this, he did that. You know, and honestly, in the military, I heard from blacks, Latinos, whites, these type of comments. Most of them said jokingly. Whenever somebody said it seriously, they were taken to the mat. So you kind of handle it. I think this kid's tweets, he made a mistake. You know, Vance came to his defense, Musk came to his defense. And this problem went away, meaning the media did not pursue it, which tells me this was much ado about nothing. They were trying to make a target out of him, and he became a legend instead.
Well, no, then you gave me my answer. They're going to have to do better than that is my answer then. Once you sort of gave me some context.
And just a quick on that, if I could. So look, you know, we sort of laughed this one off, and you know, Musk and Vance came to this 24-year-old kid's defense. But you know, I don't know if you've seen recently then where some ICE agents, you know, in personal information has gotten out because these lefty anti-ICE people in are doxing them and everything else. So yeah, I'm sure the president will probably protect the identity of federal, you know, of anybody working for the federal government anymore, because the left are bullies and they try to go after people individually. And the good thing is they're not in power, so they can't use that anymore.
Yeah, they're desperate, though. They're just desperate.
Yeah, they're desperate.
I'm sorry. It's just, as a sailor, I'm like,
You love your sailor commentary, your sailor narrative.
Because you know why? At the end of the day, we sailors, we're pigs. We're just young, dumb males with only two things that we think about, beer and women. But I have always viewed that, and that's just a natural progression into maturity. Our hormones are driving us, and we're too stupid to think properly at times, and it's a process of life. But we actually learn from that. You know, you learn, like, I don't want to treat women that way, or, dude, why are you treating women that way? Or you just see so many things from movies happen in real life. So I think I was blessed. I was born and raised in a different country. I joined the military. I did a startup. I worked at nonprofits. My life was in danger in an international incident almost once. Fingers crossed. Thank God we got our engines working. So it's just, I view all these life situations, and then when I see them played out, I feel, I'm not saying I'm right, but sometimes I can just cut through the BS and I understand what's really at play here and how they're trying to make something political. So I'm like, Doge or Big Boss, you're an idiot. You should never have put those tweets out. But I've heard worse in the military, and we self-police, and then we grow and we mature and we realize we can't be stupid, and life is more serious than how we play it at that age. So that's kind of how I look at it. And we're kind of getting deep. I mean, great analysis, Randy. I just wanted to light in the moment there before
I get that. Okay, no problem.
You've evolved, William. You're evolving.
There you go. There's so many lawsuits, over 79, my last count the other day. They tend to be going this way. We're stopping Trump, and then the higher court will overturn it. And even the Supreme Court stepped in because an Obama judge sat there and said, you will release these funds within 24 hours or something like that. And Chief Roberts stepped in and said, no, you don't have to release them. At what point does the Supreme Court step in or how does that work? And they go, we're just consolidating everything and we're going to hear this. I assume there's a process for that.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, well, you know, let's just first of all say this is what the Democrats do, and they think they're good at it. It's called lawfare, and we have, you know, a major Republican now who is going to be the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Harmeet Dillon, who understands the lawfare very well, and is one of the major players, you know, on the Republican side now on the governmental side, you know, countering what they do. But you're right though. You know, when typically the Supreme Court comes in either when there's a dispute amongst the circuits and then it gets bounced up to the Supreme Court so the Supreme Court can decide, or the issue is so important for, you know, the parties or the country. That you know, the petitioner or the aggrieved party will first go to the appeals court, but then will go to the Supreme Court quickly for an injunction. So you know, that can actually happen pretty quickly sometimes.
I mean, so give me
it can happen a couple of days. It can be a couple of months. But if there's something that's, you know, if there's a situation, like you said, with the release of funds, you know, so the aggrieved party then can then go to the Supreme Court and say, hey, look, we'd like an injunction here. That's when the Supreme Court can act pretty quickly. The problem is the Supreme Court, they're people. They're nine justices on the Supreme Court, you know, and the sad thing is they just can't take a lot of cases. But what I think what may happen here is that the district courts / you know, the district courts or the appellate courts could potentially, you know, bring certain cases together, you know, if they're dealing, you know, with the same issue. So, you know, I would think that if anything, you know, because DOGE is so important, I think for the government right now, that I think there's a good chance that these cases could be amalgamated together at some point, especially if they're dealing with the same issues.
I agree. So the final question, and Randy, I hope you can stick around. We're going to end the show, and then we're going to jump right into our hot takes in a clip format.
Oh, sure.
Final question of the night for both of you is, do you think, because I see blatant bias by activist judges, and we're at a point in our government, in our culture, in our history, where I'm really wondering, are we close to seeing the eventual impeachment of one of these activist judges in Congress? Because correct me if I'm wrong, Randy, my understanding of history, only the Supreme Court is the only thing that's in the Constitution. Every other court below it is a product of Congress. So Congress has that right. Am I looking at it wrong?
I think you're right, you know, but look, I went to Yale Law School. You know, Yale Law School is supposed to be the best law school in the country, supposedly, and it is the most liberal. And I have never seen such a politicized place in all my life, to be honest with you. And it's really made me realize what law is. And, you know, and it's a shame because, you know, law is supposed to be, you know, unbiased and that. But, you know, what I see coming out of there and, you know, in most of the Democratic appointed judges, I mean, the truth is it's not law. It's politics. It's politics disguised as law.
Well, do you see a potential impeachment, or do you think that's just me having a pipe dream?
I think, you know, if I'm a member of the Republican National Lawyers Association, and I've been one of the main advocates for fighting back here against Democrats and liberals, you know, lawfare for a long time. But I think at least one judge will be impeached, I think, as a signal to other judges. You know, you get out of hand here.
Exactly. You know, you're going. Yeah. That's what I see. I'm like, you do one. There are. It's like I always tell people, because I come from a country that was created a revolution. In a revolution, you know, to get law and order, you take out one or two judges, and all the rest of them will start following the law. And I think the same process here. You impeach one, and the rest of them, because these are some, I don't want to say cushy in a bad way, but these are mostly appointments for life. So yeah. A judge is not going to risk that when he knows he can be caught on the mat. Annette, your thoughts. Do you think we see that?
Yeah, I think it needs to happen. You know, whatever happened, doesn't Lady Justice, isn't she blindfolded?
That's a very good point.
So I think it
won't happen. As much as I want it to happen, I don't think it will happen, and I hope I'm wrong. And with that, guys, Randy, thank you for coming in. You've explained
anytime.
So, You know, so that's a wrap. I'm fired up, and it's been an interesting ride. A lot of leagues, and we
cool
all
stuff.
Have, yes, you know, and it's necessary stuff. Look, I'm an ex-sailor. Sure, I like Kim Kardashian's butt, but I'm more concerned with what is happening in this country. And my point in saying that is, and that looks at me is, it seems like I'm concerned with what's happening in entertainment, reality TV, than what's really screwing us locally at the state and at the federal level. So this was very good information from South Carolina's state-led charge against Fauci, which I hope it succeeds, to Doge barreling through a storm of lawsuits while the left clutches their pearls. And let's not forget a heavyweight street throwdown between Dan Patches Crenshaw and Tucker former Bowtie Carlson. It's clear the fight is not over. So, my friends, we're going to continue bringing you the unfiltered truth. So thank you for tuning in. And again, before I go, I'm going to add to like and share this podcast. And don't forget to bookmark grumblingsmedia.com and check out our work at YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, y Pandora. You know, that's the only time I get to throw out the Latin accent. Y Pandora. And the handle, Grumblings Media. Stay fired up, and we will catch you all next time.